Good afternoon, Prescott. And today is another wonderful day in Prescott, Arizona, everybody's hometown. But we have the honor and privilege of having with us today by phone from California, Peter Ford. And Peter Ford is the son of Glenn Ford, the great actor. Some would say one of the finest actors that America has ever seen. And even though he was born in Quebec and was originally Canadian, we can claim him as American. But I would like to start by saying, please go to the website for the biography of Glenn Ford. And the name of the book is Glenn Ford, A Life. And the website is www.glennfordbio.com. And with that, let's welcome Peter Ford to the show. Peter, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Terry.
It's absolutely a privilege and a pleasure to have you on, and let's get right into talking about, I'd like to get some of your personal life done today as well, but let's start out with your dad. Tell our listeners how you decided to write this biography and what encouraged you to write it, and then let's get into some Glenn Ford stories.
Okay, good enough. Well, I am his only child. My mom is, which you'll probably mention later, but just for those who don't know, my mom is Eleanor Powell, who was a pretty famous dancing star, in musicals in the late 30s at MGM. And I am the only issue, of that union. And my mother never did marry. And, but I was over here taking care of my dad. Toward the end of his life, he really needed his family around him, but it's all in the book, Terry, as you know, to protect him for all of the leeches that populate the city here of Hollywood, California. And, actually we're in Beverly Hills, but at any rate, so we were here and our dear friend Anne Francis was over here, visiting. And Annie played, most of the folks out there in Radio Land would know her probably as Honey West, with the TV series that she had. But she was in a lot of films, good ones too, Oxbow Incident, and of course Forbidden Planet is a classic in the sci-fi genre. But Annie was over here, having played my dad's wife in the classic film, if I do say so myself, Blackboard Jungle. And she said, Peter, you've got to write the book, because I've known Annie since I was a young child, before I was even a teenager, and she knew the story. She knew the ups and the downs and the good and the bad. And so I said, oh boy, Annie, I can write. I'm a, a competent short story guy, or a monograph. But knowing my father's story, I said, I just don't think I have the ability to do it. And so she encouraged me. And actually, I started the project with somebody who was going to help me write it. And that didn't go too well. And I finally just said to myself, well, I guess I'm into it now. Terry, I said, I better keep going, because I've left the ship and I'm in a rowboat and I can't go back. So it took me 7 years to write this book, for reasons we might discuss, but that was the genesis of it. And here it is. It's been out now a couple of months and it's doing very well.
Well, it is. And I want to encourage everyone to get this book and read it, especially Peter's a 1945 baby. I'm a 1953 baby. If you grew up watching the American Western, and if you saw, just I mentioned to you when we spoke before that I love the Rounders, which takes place, part of the action takes place right here in Prescott. But if you watch Glenn Ford in the Rounders, if you watch the interaction between Glenn Ford and Henry Fonda, that's acting at a level. And many people criticize the Western and think it's not a good art form. But if you watch those two guys playing out the characters that they are, they bring so much to those roles. And not only is it a funny movie, it's such a touching, warm story of what it is to be out in the American West. And it just is, it's just overwhelming to see what a great actor your dad is. And I think you've done great service in this biography to not only your dad, but to what it is to be a movie family, and what the movies, in a way, it's also about what the movies mean to America.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Terry. Yes. It was a journey, believe me. And, but my dad is, as you alluded to, I feel is one of the great actors of our times, and never sadly has been recognized, certainly not honored by the Academy. He did win, he did win a Golden Globe, which is pretty good. That's the Foreign Press Association's award for Apocryphal Miracles in 1961. And so that was good. But the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts, and Sciences, the Oscar, he was never nominated. And, of course, there's others besides him that were never nominated. But he was never nominated and, of course, you know, couldn't have won, which he didn't. And but all of the reviews I have, you know, having all of the documents here, his diaries, I have all of his diaries that he kept since he was a teenager, and I just have a tremendous amount of material here. Everything I was reading through the 50s, it says, oh my goodness, not only will Glenn be nominated, but he will win, and this is for, of course, Blackboard Jungle and Trial and all of those films he did in the late 50s, and he was the top box office star in 1958, more than John Wayne or Frank Sinatra or any of them. But alas, it was not to be. And even after he passed, I went to the SAG, the Screen Actors Guild, and asked if it would be possible he could be honored, and they declined. They said, well, you know, his time has come and gone, and he's not here. And I said, well, couldn't you know something be done posthumously? And no. And the funny thing is, Terry, I went to the AFI, the American Film Institute, which is the kind of the the storied keeper of all things filmatic, and I appealed to them too, because you know I just thought it was, you know, even after he passed, it would be nice. They said, well, your father never was a supporter of the AFI, and they said he never, you know, he never joined and it never was a supporter. And I said to myself, I said, I that is not true. And they said, well, we don't have any record of it. Well, I went to my files, of course, and I dug up the letter that Robert Wise, director, had written him, thanking him for being the founding member of the actors, group of the AFI. And, you know, and I sent that to them, and they, you know, they didn't really know what to say. Of course, he never was honored, but I don't know. It's like, it's bewildering to me, that he just, he's like the Rodney Dangerfield of the golden age of Hollywood set. I don't know, Terry. It's very, very depressing. But
well,
anyway.
The honor that your father gets is that there are millions of people just like me that their movie collection isn't complete until they have that 10, 12, 13 Glenn Ford films that you've got to have. And if I'm awake late at night and I'm going through the channels and there's a Glenn Ford film, I either got to avoid it or I'm going to be up all night watching it. and I think that's the recognition that most actors really in
their right.
heart of hearts, that's what they wanted, was that their public, that their followers really did appreciate
Absolutely.
The work, and we do.
Yeah, no, and you're right. And that's really all he cared about. All of this, these kudos that I'm talking about are things that I wanted for him, you know, as the only child. But no, you're right. And that's what he cared about, passionately about his fans and film lovers. And so, you know, he kept working really a little bit too late in his career. You know, he had passed his prime and he started doing a lot of stuff at the end that wasn't necessarily worthy of his talent. But on the other hand, he loved to act, and he didn't care. They paid him good money. And, you know, he didn't care about his legacy, shall we say, where others might have said, okay, you know, I'm done, I'm going to quit. He just kept going till you know, he couldn't get a job anymore. And that's all he cared about. He loved to act, and that was in his blood from the moment he was a young child.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, you can't watch, and I don't care which genre you want to look at. If you watch Blackboard Jungle, I've spent the last 30 years as a college professor, teaching is very dear to my heart. And I can't, you know, anytime I'm down and I don't feel like, oh, gee, I don't know if I can do another year in the classroom, I watch that.
Yep.
And it wasn't just a man who was a great actor. It was somebody who really understood what was going on. And there's part of what your dad portrayed on the screen, especially when I look at that role, I think it's almost as if he's talking to me and saying, you can't give up. You got to hang in there with these kids. You can't give up. And when the role in the movie transcend the reality of the celluloid in the film, and speak to you in a way that is life changing. You know, you gotta look at that and say, man, this guy had something going on.
Yep, you're right. And thank you for that. You're absolutely correct. That was a lot of people felt that way about that film, and others he did. I mean, he was, I tell you the truth, Terry, I don't think, and I will throw this out to your listeners, I don't think he ever gave a bad performance in any film he ever made. And when you consider that he was in Westerns, film noir, you look at movies like The Big Heat, and he was a great comic actor. I look at something like TLC August Moon that was been recently on TV, and of course that was supposed to be Marlon Brando's film, and he got top billing. I'm convinced absolutely my father stole that film from Marlon. I would love to have people, if they have the time, can rent that, or you know, if they have it, to look at that. And you walk away from that film and say, whose film was that? Well, it was a Glenn Ford film, and Marlon was he kicked Marlon's butt on that thing, as far as, you know, in my opinion. There was a rivalry there, but yeah, I mean, all of his war films, those some of them were serious, but many of those comedic, Imitation General and Don't Go Near the Water. I don't know of an actor who could to be so convincing and portray such honesty in so many different genres of film.
Absolutely. And there was, you know, there was a quality to, in a Glenn Ford film, when he looked out from the screen and he delivered whatever the point of the movie was, whatever the underlying grist, the grind of the movie was, when he looked out and said that line, whatever it was, you bought it. You right. bought it entirely. Yeah. And I mean, that's it. It was just genius on his part. Peter, we got to take a quick break here. We're going to take the first break today. Folks, if you want to ask any questions of Peter Ford about his father, Glenn, and the career that he had in Hollywood, our number today is 541-1016. If you're listening on the internet, it's 928-541-1016. We'll take a break and be right back. Alrighty, folks, we're back to the dulcet tones of Jimmy Buffett, and we are visiting today with Peter Ford. We are visiting about the biography Peter wrote about his father, Glenn Ford. And as I mentioned to you, if you go to the website, glennfordbio.com, you will see all of, you know, there's literally a ton of information here. There's some great, beautiful pictures. There's a way to contact Mr. Ford if you want to visit with him. You can purchase the book. Everything you need is there. So www.glennfordbio.com. And Peter, we've got a lovely young lady, Mrs. Mason's on the phone here, and she has a remembrance for you she wants to share with you. Mrs. Mason, are you there?
Yes,
you're on with Peter Ford. What did you want to share with him?
Thank you, Dr. Terry.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to bring this up, and Mr. Ford may know this already. The movie with the little gypsy dancer, Margarita Consino, Rita Hayworth.
Yes.
Beautiful with the dancing and all that. But what I wanted to tell you was, and you already know it probably, after she passed, he had a beautiful portrait of Rita Hayworth. They had been neighbors, by the way. And he saw to it that he got that portrait to her daughter after Rita died. I thought that was so nice of him.
Yes.
And well, thank you for writing the book.
Oh, thank you. Well, yes, Rita was our neighbor. I got married in my father's house here in 1970 to my dear wife. And Rita was at my wedding.
Oh,
yes, and she was a dear, dear friend. And when Dad built his house next to her, she sold him the property actually that he built his house upon.
Oh, what a nice!
The two of them conspired to cut a little gate in between their two properties, so that he would come down here. And that portrait you're talking about.
Yes.
Until the day he passed, he had that in his room, and he had a little vase. Where he affixed to that portrait, where he would keep a red rose because she would often come down here and pick a rose from his rose garden and take it home, and that was kind of their little thing together. And I still have that portrait, and I still have that little vase, and he would keep a rose in that next to his bed, and that was there when he passed.
Oh, you have added so much to my memory. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And God bless you.
God bless you, too.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mrs. Mason. Thanks for calling. Now, Peter, when the subject of Rita Hayworth comes up, and I don't want to be sensationalistic, but one of the things that you mentioned, you know, you're not You're not writing an abridged biography. You're telling the whole truth about your dad.
You got to tell Mrs. Mason to turn her radio off now, Jerry. I think I know what's coming.
Well, I just wanted to mention that your dad was close to Rita Hayworth for many, many years.
Yes.
You couldn't be, you know, in terms of a man's dream of what a good-looking woman is, if you can look at Rita Hayworth and not think that she's worth having a rose in the vase for.
Okay, you know, well, I thought you were going somewhere else. So oh, yes, you're right. They met when they were teenagers. This has never been disclosed in the book. I mean, it's not a big deal, but they met when dad, my grandfather, they came from Canada, as you said. I'll make this quick. And Newton, my grandfather, his father, drove a tram. He was a railroad conductor at the Canadian Pacific Railroad up in Canada, but he drove a tram, in his older age here between the Venice and Santa Monica piers. And my father used to fill in for him on occasion. And Rita and her father, Rita Casino and her father, were both dancers. And there was a guy named Tony Cordero who used to have gambling ships off the coast here in Santa Monica. And Rita was out there dancing. And my father actually met her when he took her dad and her to the pier from whence they set sail out to these gambling ships, because they were out at a far enough limit where the government couldn't touch them. Because, of course, that was illegal even then. And then they made their first film together in 1940. And as, you know, Mrs. Mason said, he was a pallbearer at her funeral. So they had known each other for many, many, many years.
Now, while we're talking about neighbors, let's flesh this out a little bit more. You've got a neighborhood, and James Mason is right down the street. Charlie Chaplin's basically next door. You've got a neighborhood that nobody would believe. Talk about your neighbors when you were growing up.
Well, yes. Fred Astaire lived up the street. When I was young, we lived on a street called Cove Way. And in fact, the house is still there. It was 1012 Cove Way. The number has changed, but the house is basically exactly the same. And when I was a young child, I would go up and visit Pickfair, which, of course, is Mary Pickford's home, Douglas Fairbanks. And I would sit on Mary Pickford's knee. I'm going to name drop now, Dr. Terry.
Okay, but, that's yeah. The listeners will love it.
That's good. Well, and I would sit on Mary Pickford's knee, and I met all of the great people up there as a young child, and Gloria Swanson's and all of those people of a certain age. My first autographed picture I got was by Pola Negri, so that'll tell you how old I am. But at any rate, and then, of course, Billy Wilder, the director, lived down the street a bit. And across the street was David O. Selznick, who, you know, some of you might know. He's produced a few films of note. But Mr. Selznick lived across the street, and James Mason was my babysitter. And, of course, Jimmy Stewart and Jack Benny and some of the other folks were right nearby. And, of course, Charlie Chaplin was my next door neighbor, and I had a little incident. We don't have time to get into that today, I'm sure, but read the book, because there's a reason why to this day I loathe Charlie Chaplin. But we should tease them, Dr. Terry, and let them just see why would he hate Charlie Chaplin, but I do to this day, and you'll know why.
And I'm telling you, having read the book, you can't. Every one of these stories is a winner. Every single one of these is a home run. It is, you got to read the book just for the stories, if for no other reason than to enjoy these stories. But I do want to do, I want you to name drop one more time at least. Your swimming coach, when you decided to swim, mom and dad built an Olympic pool in the backyard, and and your mother, who, when your dad married her, she was much more famous than was he, and she was already an established star. So she goes to her friends to get you a swimming coach. Who was your swimming coach?
My swimming coach was Johnny Weissmuller of Tarzan fame. And when mom first started out in Atlantic City, New Jersey, she was on stage at age 11. It's quite amazing, her story, and I hope I can write her book one day. I have the will, and now I think I have the confidence. But at any rate, but she knew Johnny then when he was a lifeguard, before his Olympic career, and of course then they knew each other through his days on film. And so who do you call? You call up Johnny Weissmuller to come over and teach little Petey how to swim. I was indulged. I had no idea who these people were. You know, when Dad made Follow the Sun with Ben Hogan. The great Ben Hogan, the 20th Century Fox, sent Ben to the house, and he practically lived with us for about 2 weeks, training Dad to swing the clubs just like he did for Follow the Sun, 1950. And here, here I am, you know, out there with Mr. Hogan giving me golf lessons. So I don't know. It's almost a fantasy. You know, I feel kind of like, you know, that it's even today, Dr. Terry, it's quite unreal.
Well, it's amazing when to me reading this book. And again, anyone who's my age or older will really appreciate everything that you're alluding to, because we grew up watching these people. We grew up seeing these people. And if you were a farm kid like me on a ranch in Montana and you went to the drive-in movie or you went to the Liberty Theater in Great Falls, Montana to see a Glenn Ford film, you have these wonderful memories of being in the theater and watching this fella and going, wow. You know, it just, and when I was reading this book, every other page I'd go, oh, you're kidding me. Oh, no, that you didn't.
You're so kind.
We're coming up on a hard break here for Fox News at the bottom of the hour. We got Michael Holden. We'll get to Michael as soon as we get back, Peter. So what we want to do when we come back is I want to talk a little bit more about the book, and then I want to get into your life a little bit here and talk about what it's like to grow up as the son of Glenn Ford, and then how do you make that separation? How do you become Peter Ford after being Glenn Ford's son? So we'll come back. We got a hard break here at the bottom. We'll come back. If you want to call in, 541-1016. We'll be right back. And we're back, Prescott, and we have the privilege today to be visiting with Peter Ford, and we are talking about his father's biography that he has written, and he took 7 years to write it, and having read it in much less than 7 years, I can tell you that it is an excellent book, and you should get out and get this book. You can get it off the website, and glennfordbio.com. You can also see on that website a number of wonderful stories and pictures and memorabilia, really, about Glenn Ford's career. And Peter Ford has his own website, and he has what I consider to be one of the great galleries of autographed photos. You've got the Vincent Price photo that you've got in there is Vincent Price as a young, handsome, dashing guy. He's not the old creepy mad scientist that lots of people remember him from those Hammer films where he was always playing some creepy guy, but he was the young, attractive, you know, a stunningly handsome guy. And I just love that autographed section that you have on your website, Peter.
Thank you. Stardust Memories. Yeah, it's peterford.com. Yeah, and that's about, Terry, that's about a quarter or even less of what I have here. I just can only, I have to pay my webmaster to post that stuff, so I ran out of money. I said, well, that's enough. But I think if people went there and looked at that Stardust Memories on the peterford.com link, they'd have a lot of fun, especially if they're, you know, older like us, or at least older like me. You're a youngin', but they might see a lot of people they know there.
It is really nice to see that, and it's done in a way that you can tell. It just bubbles over with respect. It's clear how much you liked and respected those people. We got Michael on line two. Let's get him on the air here. Michael, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am, Professor. Thank you, and hello to the author. Just two things. I do think it's very odd that William Holden is so well remembered, and his father isn't. I mean, not to that extent. And the other thing is that Eleanor Powell, whose name we've heard, in my opinion, is the greatest female dancer ever in the movies, equivalent to the greatest male dancer, Fred Astaire.
And isn't it interesting that that was one of his neighbors, that right there in a very close proximity, you've got the greatest female film dancer of all time, and right down the street, the greatest male film dancer of all time. Isn't that amazing?
Yes, and you know, one other thing about with Rita Hayworth, I hate to recall this, but I think her father was a horrible man.
Yes, and he had some problems with her.
Sexually molested her for.
Yes, and she was. It was, that was true. That was not a happy, happy scene.
It's wonderful that she turned out as she did, though.
Michael, may I tell you that Fred Astaire told me personally, and it's in a book. I somebody had said it was in a book, and I went out and got the book on Amazon, and because I was so happy, it wasn't just me, my ears that heard it. He said my mother was the greatest dancer on film, including himself.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, no, he said that, and
well, I don't feel alone then.
No, you hit it right on the head, and I was very, very honored. And it's in a book, and I can't tell you what the book is, but if you email me, I'm very accessible.
Great!
I'll tell you the name of that book, and it's right there. And he said it, but he told me that personally. He said your mother was the greatest dancer, and including me. And so
I will buy your book too. I should hasten to add.
Well. It's on Amazon and it's cheap too. I don't know. They keep lowering the price. I don't know. I guess Dr. Terry and Michael, they feel that it's going to disappear soon. We better get what we can get.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm glad you wrote it. Thanks a lot.
No, thank you.
Bye now.
Thanks,
yeah,
Michael.
Yeah. I forgot the other part of his question. But yeah, she was great. And if I might say, as good as a dancer she was a better human being and a better person and just a saintly, wonderful, wonderful mom. And without her, I don't know where I'd be today, but she was my refuge and always just a great gal. But
one of the things that I think comes through about what a good mother you have is the, or I should say had,
right.
But one of the things that verifies that and proves that is you've been married to the same woman now for what, 40?
Almost 41 this December, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, she's my best friend. And I know I say this to people and they say, you're lying. I said, no, it's true. We have never had a fight. I would not be a good candidate for Dr. Phil. I'll tell you that, Dr. Terry. We have never had a fight or a cross word. I just love her to death. I mean, it's been, and we dated 3 years before then. We have never had a cross word. And I don't know. I'm just blessed. I'm blessed. My mother and my wife, I'm the luckiest guy in the world.
Boy, that's, you know, there is, if you got to be lucky, those are the two best places to be lucky. Do we need to take a call or go to break? We'll go ahead. Peter, we got to take a quick break. And then we got Tim Holden on line two here, and he wants to talk about True West Magazine. So we'll be right back.
Great.
Alrighty, we're back with Peter Ford, and we are discussing the biography Peter has written of his father, Glenn Ford, A Life. But we've got Tim on line two. Let's get to Tim. Tim, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir.
And you're on the air with Peter Ford. What did you want to mention?
Peter.
Yes,
there
ma'am.
Was a very good, I probably started getting True West Magazine when they first started the publication, when Bob Bozbell took it over. And they had a very good article in there on your father and you both.
Yes, I did that interview with Mr. Beck. Yes, very nice man, and it's just in this issue.
Yes, it is.
And I was very pleased with that.
For
anybody who gets that magazine, True West, it's the August issue. Just let me say that my father's third wife's pictured on the cover.
Yes.
Geronimo, little sick humor there, but when you read the book, Tim, you'll understand.
I understand.
Sentiment.
The one thing that I found interesting in there was one of the comments that you made. He tried to be the father that I wanted him to be.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. It's a nice article, and tell you the truth, I subscribe to another one, Cowboys and Indians, and I've seen that magazine, True West, before, but I had never subscribed. I think I must, because they sent me two copies of with my story in it, and I thought, ooh, this is a pretty good magazine. So I think that's something I'm going to have to put on my wish list.
Well, you won't be disappointed in it. Trust
Great.
Me.
All righty, Tim. Thanks
you,
so
sir.
Much. Anything else you wanted to ask?
No, that's it.
All righty, buddy. Thanks for listening.
And thank you. Bye-bye.
Now, Peter, before we get specifically to you and your life, I wanted to mention one more thing about your father. And I was impressed with the amount of public service he did in terms of serving in various branches of the military and working with the military and supporting the military. Could you speak to that for a little bit?
Yes. He actually joined the Coast Guard. He was a Boy Scout. He ended up being an Eagle Scout, but he became a Sea Scout after the Boy Scouts. And through that, before World War II it began, he was in the Coast Guard Auxiliary. went into the Marine Corps when World War II broke out shortly thereafter, and he did not see service in the Marine Corps. There's a lot of stories floating around the internet how he was at Auschwitz and liberated Auschwitz and all of this stuff, but he did not see service, but he wanted to see service. I mean, his heart was there, but he had a bleeding ulcer, and he was very disappointed that he could not serve in the way that he wanted to. So about the time he made a film called Torpedo Run, in those late 50 years when he was doing so much good work, which in my opinion is a pretty decent submarine movie.
It's a great movie.
But he joined the Navy Reserve. And I tell you, Dr. Terry, he served with great honor there. He did a tremendous amount of work for the Navy. What he did is he narrated films, and he was part of their campaign to recruit, you know, young gentlemen in there, and he ended up in 1967 going to Vietnam, and that itself is quite a story. We could do a whole show on just that, but he went to Nam because they wanted him to do a film, and he felt that he needed firsthand experience to see, and he came under fire there, and oh, there's a whole story there. It was quite interesting, but he was in Vietnam in the Mekong Delta, and did come under fire, and his helicopter was shot down once, and a lot of stuff happened there. And he ended up retiring as a full captain in the Navy in, I think, early 1970s. So, and not only did he serve his military, of course, he loved his country as I do, and I think you do, Dr. Terry. We're all patriots over here, and we're American, you know, flag waving constitutional types. But he also did a lot of work for the Cancer Society and just a whole myriad of different charitable causes. He gave a tremendous amount of himself to all causes, so I'm very proud of that participation that he did. He was not selfish in giving his name and his time for causes, and that was very nice.
Well, I think that's one. When you read this biography and you see what this man was up to and what he was doing in terms of service, you know, if you update it to today and you say, could you see, you know, pick a star. I don't want to berate anyone, but I have a very difficult time looking at the movie stars of today and imagining them being in the Navy Reserve or serving an active duty Marine Corps. I mean, there are some folks who've done that, but for people in your father's generation, it was the standard.
It was. We're part of that Ronald Reagan, John Wayne, you know, there were a few back at John, you know, back in the day, but there were also a few on the other side of the fence. And I think today, although they're starting to emerge, so those of us, I'm not in the business anymore actively, but there is an awakening, I think, and people are starting to, you know, have the courage, shall we say, to talk about their feelings about loving our nation. And so I'm really happy to see that. But it's tough to work in this town even today, unless you told the I don't want to get too political here, but you know what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. Well, now, you're also, speaking of politics, you are a Tea Party person. You're a staunch Republican.
I am. Yeah. No, I'm the second vice chair of the Republican Party of L.A. County. I am the third grand poobah of all Republicans in L.A. County, and there's a million of us here. We're in the process of organizing ourselves to do better than we did in the last cycle. And I'm more libertarian than I am anything, but I am a Republican because they speak to my values. But we're having our big convention in a couple of weeks here in L.A., and Pat Boone, my neighbor and good buddy, who, you know, we all know about his colors. Pat's going to be the MC, and Michelle Bachman's coming out to be our keynote. So I'm going to be very much involved with that. But among my other feathers in my hat, it's being an active Tea Partyist. I'm all over that stuff. So I think it's our best hope for, you know, saving what's left of this great nation.
Absolutely. Now, part of your experience was in the movies. Part of it was on radio. Part was as musician. And then you kind of left that part and became a contractor, became someone who was building homes.
Yes, I did. Real briefly, I was an actor, a singer. I was under contract to Philips Records, and I was on American Bandstand, and I had a whole career as a singer and did all of the local shows and was on the Mike Douglas show back in Chicago, Cleveland, and I was everywhere, but I couldn't make a living. And being, you know, one of the reasons I've been married 40 years happily is that I provided for my wife, and I couldn't do that as an actor or a singer. And I thought, well, I better figure out something. And I became I was always a carpenter. I always loved carpentry, and I became a general building contractor. And that's really how I made my living. And I built a lot of houses for a lot of famous people, Blake Edwards and Julie Andrews and a whole bunch of people. Even crazy, he's a sweetheart, but Richard Simmons, I built a house for Richard. he's a wonderful guy. And believe me, he's true to all of that passion, but he is a wild one. But I love doing that, and I could provide for my family, and we have three children, but I retired when Dad started getting really needy, and I saw that he was being savaged by certain people who had not his best interest in heart, and I retired, and we moved in here about 12 years before he passed to take care of him, and that was pretty much a full-time job.
Yeah. We have to take another break, Peter, and then we're going to come back for our last segment, so please hold on. We'll be right back. If you want to ask Peter a question, 541-1016, this will be our last segment coming up. And we're back, Prescott, and we are visiting today with Peter Ford, and we have been talking about the biography he wrote of his dad, Glenn Ford, and that again is Glenn Ford Life, and if you'd like to go to that website, it's glennfordbio.com. The book is available. You can just go to the website there. You can buy the book off amazon.com. And having read the book, it is excellent. It is a very intuitive look at his father, and it's a very honest look. It is very well written, and as Peter mentioned earlier, he took 7 years to write it. And when you read this book, you'll appreciate, much in the way that a carpenter might do anything, it's done with quality and perseverance. Now, Peter, what are your plans for the future? What's going to happen to Peter Ford in the future?
Well, you mentioned you were from Montana, and Montana's looking pretty good to me right now. I tell you, I've been up there a couple of times to Western Montana, and I'm thinking that California, you know, maybe is not for me. Although I need to stick it out here as long as I can. But as we slip into the mire that California has become, I'm thinking of moving. And I do enjoy writing, Dr. Terry, and I can't think of anything happier for me than to be up in a place like that with the trees and the eagles and the fishing. I'm a fisherman, so I think I might be leaving California one of these days.
Well, I'll tell you, a guy could do a heck of a lot worse than to be down at the headwaters of the Missouri River where the Gallatin, the Madison, and the Jefferson come together, and be out there with a nice fly fishing outfit and making those brown trout nose up, get a Royal Coachman out there floating on top of the water. And
you're talking,
guy could
my
do a
language.
Lot worse than that.
I had planned, Linda and I had planned to come, my wife is Linda, we had planned to come to the Prescott Film Festival. In fact, we had been invited, but as you know, I told you, I said, they pulled the plug on us, and I was so sad because they were going to show 310 to Yuma, a classic Western, of course, the original one, the good one.
That's right.
And another one that hasn't been seen too often is called Lust for Gold that he made in Arizona, and of course, the Rounders. And I was going to bring all, you know, I have all of the outfits that he wore, and I thought the fans would really enjoy interacting and seeing the clothes, his, you know, his cowboy boots and hats and all that stuff. And I don't know, they pulled the plug on me, so I'm really sad that we couldn't be there in September.
Well, I'll tell you, for all the Glenn Ford fans and the Henry Fonda fans, I got to tell you, I'm awfully sad about that, because the Rounders, in my estimation, that's one of the funniest, but it's also one of the most poignant films about the West that was ever made, and it speaks to that love-hate relationship between the cowboy and the horse.
Yep.
And it is really well made. Now, not only are you in that film, Peter Fonda's in that film.
Yes, yeah, we were in that street scene when Hope Holliday and Sue Ann Langdon cross the street, and Dad and Hank have the hats on their behinds. You know, it's a cute scene. It's a wonderful little film, and unfortunately MGM did not publicize it the way they should have. In fact, I was recently over at Shirley Fonda's house, Hank's The Widow now. And we were talking about that film, and my, that's one of my father's favorites. And Shirley said that that Henry liked that film a lot too, and she didn't understand why they just let it kind of. It came out on a double bill with Get Yourself a College Girl. So you figure it out, Dr. Terry. I don't know. It's sometimes these studios just don't know. But I tell you, that film is worth renting or buying, and I highly recommend that film. It's just delightful.
If you want to see into the mind of the working cowboy and every part of that, right down to the amount of courtesy they extended each other, the guys that I know who actually work ranches, the guys who never own a horse, don't even own their own tack, and they live in the bunkhouse and they work for $300 a month, they are unfailingly polite. They are skilled in many ways, and one of the things they're skilled in is spending long periods of time without saying a word. And, you know, your dad and Henry Fonda pulled that off.
Right, and Chill Wills, too, you know, those great actors. Hey, listen, you mentioned a brown trout. I have never caught a brown trout, so I just want you and your listeners to know you got to get me down there one day and take me fishing, because I want that first brown trout in my, in my creel.
Well, I'll tell you, my dad and a bunch of my family still up in Montana. My dad and my little sister are up in Helena, and they're still great fishing. My brother-in-law is an assistant attorney general in Helena, and he's also a crazy, crazy fisherman. He can't go anywhere that he doesn't have to stop and fly fish.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, there is a ton of great fishing. And if you're going to go someplace, if you go up in the Rockies, getting that western third of the state of Montana, there is dynamite fishing. And you can go further west. You could go over to Coeur d'Alene or maybe up to Ponderay Lake. And there's so, the fishing up there is so great, but winters are brutal. You don't.
No, I know. Well, we will be talking, Dr. Terry. Now, there's got to be fishing down in Prescott. No,
We've got some fishing around here. I wouldn't call it outstanding right now, but there's fishing close by that's good, and there's some great fish stories to be told about this area. Now, Peter, we're down to almost about a minute here. In fact, they just flashed the minute sign. I want you to promise to come back and be with us again so we can tell some more stories and get an update on what's happening in your life, and then find out more about what's going on with the Tea Party and the Republicans. And you're a lifelong shooter. You're a fan of the Second Amendment, and we got to talk about that, but we're running out of time today. What's the last thing you want to tell our listeners about this great biography you've written of your dad?
Well, thank you. Please, you know, if you can afford it, buy it. If you can go to a library, read it, and let's talk down the road. And, you know, God bless all of you, and God bless this great nation.
Absolutely. Well, Peter, it is a joy to have you on. It was a privilege and a pleasure. And as I've told you before, I have gotten so much joy from watching your dad's movies. And the only thing that makes any of that better is having read your biography and seeing what a fine gentleman your dad was. It just was a pleasure to have you on the show, and I hope you'll come back and visit with us again. But now we got to go. Bye-bye, Peter Ford.